all of the great poets, painters, scientists, alchemists, and philosophers have had the orb in their hands.
But what is it?
Some say it's a weapon of catastrophic proportions. I believe it to be a type of engine, self-sustaining and of endless power. I believe this, Sandow, because I am a man of hope.
Colonel Venger, please don't activate it.
Sandow, I must.
Then so must Sandow. Sandow will forever carry this burden.
That's about it. The rest is Sandow listing chocolate recipes. That's why I kept it. I like to bake.
So, hi! Welcome to Venture Brothers, the Venture Brothers Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brian Dressel. I don't know why I'm going for supremely annoying than this intro, but whatever.
You sound like Ron Funches.
Ooh. This week, we are joined by our regular people, which includes Nick Guava Friedemann.
I hate that fruit because it looks disgusting.
It does. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, the seeds look like poops.
Oh, God, it does kind of look like poops. And Graham, Kumquat Mason.
Hello. Yeah, Kumquats are neat.
Yeah. I was going to go with water apple, but because I definitely never heard of the water apple.
Yeah, what the fuck is a water apple?
Also known as a Thai wax apple.
Ooh.
But the apple is essentially a berry. It's a pear-shaped berry called a water apple. What the fuck is this fruit?
I don't like it. I don't trust it. I don't trust it at all.
Yeah, I was very close for going for Graham's other very well-known nickname of Graham Persimmon Mason. But that's
is my nickname.
I know, that's what we called you in college, was old Persimmon. That would have been more creative than what we went with, which was just Grandpa. Although I do still really enjoy Grandpa.
Yeah. A lot of people do.
Oh, boy. Orb!
Yep. ORB.
ORB. Operation Rusty's Blanket. I was about to say baloney, and then I realized that was wrong.
You could have said baloney, which would have been funny.
Would it have been, though? That's kind of why I backed out on it. I decided
Operation
just to let people know that I had a terrible joke.
Rusty's baloney.
Operation Rusty's Baloney. It was funny. So this is an episode came out, the second to last episode for the season. And for those of us who were fans at the time, this was our first real information dump. Like, oh wow, they're just going pure lore on this episode, and they did it in a really fun way. And I believe it's my turn to say what happens, so I should just dive into that. And first, a big thanks to good old Brock Holiday for his notes. I think I'm just not going to read it. I'm just going to go off the old noggin on this one. I just looked at his and I'm like, you know what? I think I can
good
do
luck.
This one without Brock's help. Not the notes. I'm definitely keeping the notes because Brock did really good notes on this one. But the summary is this. Orb is a thing that the guild made, not the Guild of Calamitous Intent, because that wasn't a thing yet, and it can control unlimited power. Nobody really knows what it does. So they know that it could be dangerous, so the Ventures have hidden it away, and Billy Quizboy, who's obsessed with the old Rusty Venture cartoon, has found the hidden messages to find the orb, and he goes to Rusty, and they decide to go on a globe-trotting to New York adventure with the help of Pete White and the Alchemist to find out where they put the orb. They find the orb, and all of while this is going on, Brock is finding out that his one major job as Operation Rusty's Blanket was to make sure that Dr. Venture's idiot son never stumbles upon the orb, and if he does, he's got to put him down. So oh boy, Brock has been called to action. He's actually going to start trying to, maybe if Rusty it turns out to be the idiot we all are afraid he is, kill Rusty? But then at the very last moment, Rusty's like, you know what? If we don't know what it does, I can't turn it on. And Brock doesn't have to kill him. But then Brock's car tries to kill him, and it's the end of the episode. That's for next week. That's kind of everything that happens, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Brock's version was way more concise, and that's just not my style. Thanks, Brock, though. Yeah, so when this episode came out, I was living with Graham in Chicago in our dorm room. So this was before we even decided that we actually wanted to live together. This is back when Columbia said, you're fucking living together. You're going to like it.
You're friends now. Enjoy.
I mean, fucking 12 years later, they were right. I mean, let's be honest.
Idiots.
But when I saw this episode, I was like, I was floored. I had no idea. I thought the whole show was going to go on with this just kind of like, here's a little bit of info and look at how fun and funny it is. And here's a little bit of info and fun and funny. And then this one comes out and it's like, wow, they are just, they're going nuts. They hint at what happened to Dr. Venture. We have a more of an inside look at what Brock's doing there. Like, you have legitimate things like actual history. We see the dawn of the Guild of Calamitous Intent. Mm-hmm. We find out, if you have subtitles on, that Phantom Limb is there somehow. It's just kind of a...
Isn't Phantomus his dad? Phantom Limb's dad?
Yes, but in the subtitles it always says Phantom Limb, which makes no sense.
Weird. And then also, Colonel Lloyd Venture is also... That's one generation removed as well, yeah?
Yeah, that'd be Rusty's grandpa.
Okay.
So yeah, it's at least I think so. I could be wrong, but I think that's how it broke down. Yeah,
that sounds right to me. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's just a crazy episode, and it's crazy, it's funny, it's very well written. Pete White is the least annoying he's ever been, and everyone in the show kind of goes, you're an idiot, and that's so refreshing to see.
They've turned on him finally.
This is just one of those episodes where I don't even take notes when I watch it. Like, I failed as a podcaster. I'm like, I need to pay attention to this thing so I can take notes and I can talk about it and everything that it does. And I just got lost in it. Every time I watch this one, I get totally lost in the fanfare of it. Like, I love this episode so much.
Yeah, it gets you really engaged. Then you try to start thinking and start, you know, processing it. Like, okay, so if he was there and this and that and the other thing. And yeah, you get really caught up in the lore, which is really cool.
Yeah. And it really reminds me of back in season 2. I forget the name of the episode. With the ignore me, like, it kind of had that sort of feel to it. Like, there's an adventure, like, there's not really a ticking clock on this one like there was on that one, but it still, it kind of has that feel to it still.
Yes.
20 Years to Midnight was that episode.
Yes, thank you. But it there's a, I don't want to say intensity, but like there's a pace to this one, and it never lets up, and I really, really like that.
I agree. Like, there's, and it's not too frantic. Like, I never feel lost or kind of like confused, even though they're constantly bringing in characters for like specific reasons, because it's kind of like bringing in your own intelligence, that kind of stuff. And it all kind of fits, right? Like, we get to see a bunch of characters. Well, some characters we haven't seen in a while, some we saw, you know, at least somewhat recently. But yeah, they really are bringing in as many people as they possibly can. Which works. Like, it's not like a muddled episode.
And at the same time, setting up the season finale. Like, it's...
Exactly.
This episode has to do dual duty of setting up a season finale and giving us lore that we didn't know. And it nails it, like, flawlessly. Like, and I know I speak a lot of high praise about this show, but when it comes to just tight writing, there's almost no episode that I could turn to that is as... just on point as this one. It just nails everything it had to do.
Absolutely. Like, there's no fat on this episode at all, in spite of the fact that there's like tons and tons of world building and exposition. Oh my goodness gracious. Exposition.
Yeah. And but it never, like, this feels like the episode in a lesser show we'd be talked to the whole time. Like, it'd just be talking to us like, all right, guys, we can't just stretch this all over a season, so here's all the info you're going to need to get through the end of this. Just sit with us. It's going to be okay. And usually those episodes are kind of lackluster. They're kind of boring, but, like, you kind of, you know, you have to sit through it to get there. And this one, it never, never feels boring.
Yeah. This episode is very efficient with dumping information, keeping it entertaining, and, yeah, making you actually, you know, ingest it, you know, and actually follow along without being, you know, scattered and all over the place of like, wait, what? No, wait, who? Where are we? It lays it out pretty well. And jumps back in time a lot.
Yeah, a lot. And they do it with that nice sepia tone. But like there's something to be said about like what Nick just said. There's no fat on this episode, which is totally true. But we do go to Studio 54 where they have a changing table for some reason. That always has struck me as odd.
That is an odd one.
Yeah. Like I can't imagine Studio 54 has a changing table.
No, but I think it's you have to.
No, you don't. But believe me, no, you don't. It'd be wonderful if you had to. It'd save me a lot of like fuck moments. But no, you definitely don't have to. We're literally wasting time as far as what the episode needs us to know in the whole Studio 54 scene.
Until the alchemist shows up.
Well, yeah, but everything. Yeah, until he actually solves it. But while we're still following Pete White's trail, we're just wasting time. But it's still like, but that's where the entertainment balance of this episode comes in. Because if it was just exposition dump, we never would have taken the detour to Studio 54. We never would have gotten one of the best moments of the entire season of behind the wild gray gentleman, that guy.
Like, amazing.
In an episode that's so serious and so plot driven, it still manages to make me just bust up laughing. And it's mostly the bathroom at the Studio 54 scene. That and when they TP Dr. Orpheus when he's astral projecting.
And the alchemist's reaction to it is hilarious. Yeah. They TP'd your corporeal form!
And I love it. As soon as he astral projects, oh, he's astral projecting. You know what to do, Dino. Like, they've just been waiting for this. Like, just so excited to do it.
100%. This is like a plan that they hatched, like, months ago.
Yeah, you could, like, the first time he did it, you like it had to be like, so can he see us when he's doing this? I don't know. Next time he does it, let's check. And he does it again. Nope, he can't see us. I have an idea.
Exactly.
He'll do it again at some point.
I also love Billy's outfit throughout this entire, well, not the entire episode, but through the boy adventurer part.
Oh, yeah. When he dresses up as the Billy Quiz Boy?
Yeah.
It's good.
The ugliest outfit I think I've ever seen.
And I understand the show does not work with us getting this scene, but I really want to see the scene where Billy convinces Rusty to wear his outfit. Because what the fuck word jujitsu did Billy pull to convince Rusty to do anything that makes Rusty uncomfortable?
I know. It's a true feat.
Like, that's my... Like, how? How did he do it?
Talk to him about capris, for sure. That was, like...
It's just, I'm so stumped at it. And I feel like that's probably why they had to just cut that scene out. Because they know their character. They know, like, nah, there's no chance this would work.
Exactly.
No, not unless he got knocked out and woke up like that. And was just like, well, this is what I'm wearing.
But even then, I feel like Rusty's been walking around naked enough times. He'd rather walk around naked than wear his old Rusty cartoon outfit.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. Billy Quiz Boy is pretty good at that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because even at the end of the episode, he convinces him to do the Go Team Venture.
Oh, I love that they give him... That Rusty gave him the Go Team Venture. Like, the few moments where Rusty is a nice person really just warm my heart. Because it's so few and far between that when it happens, it's like, aw, look at you.
It means so much to him.
Yeah. I apologize if everybody can hear my baby screaming in the background. It is getting near his bedtime, and I can hear it happening, so... But we will be done with this before then, so we're okay. I'm just leaving him alone in a room by himself. That's okay as a parent, right?
Yeah.
Ideal, yeah. Even.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when is he ever going to be old enough to look after himself if you don't start now?
Right? It's like he's 8 months old, dude. Get an apartment already.
Yeah. figure it out.
My wife is home before anyone actually like calls child services on me. Everything is fine. So just kind of moving around my notes here. Like, there's so much in this episode that I know we're going to miss stuff, and I know you listening are probably going, like, wow, did you not talk about this? So I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit and just make sure that I hit the things that when I was watching it, and I'm like, holy fuck, I have to talk about this. And the first thing is the opening of the episode. Doing the old Rusty cartoon. I'm not sure if this is the exact opening, but it's with Colonel Gentleman, who's been shot in, like, the neck.
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just, like, telling Rusty to kill this person who's on Kano's shoulders. Kano could easily kill the guy.
Yep.
But they want Rusty to do it. And I love Colonel Gentleman's description of what the gun's going to do. Of, it's going to kick like a virgin. And it's just like, it's going to kick like a virgin. My God, Colonel Gentleman, what have you done to people?
Terrible things. Like all of the other classic Team Venture.
It's too graphic.
It's such a horrifying phrase. Like, and it's one of those ones that I have missed, I think, every time I've watched this episode. And then when I was watching it today, I just hear, it's going to kick like a virgin. Ugh.
Gross. Yep.
Gross.
It's definitely flown over my head many times until this time I watched it. I was like, nah, he must have said something different.
Nah.
Though it definitely sounded like that.
Yep. Oh, you're just disgusting. You're just a gross person.
Yep.
But 100%. I love him. Like, yep. I love him.
Well, he's the least of all of those evils for the most part.
I mean, I don't think Action Man would ever say it's going to kick like a virgin, but Action Man also would not be making Rusty take the shot. He would have leapt over the wall and shot the poor guy 15 times in the face and one time in the balls for good luck.
All in front of, like, all with, like, Rusty strapped to, like, a baby Bjorn. So that way he can, like, fully understand what like, being a man really is.
Yeah.
While Rusty's covered in blood by the end of it.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
And then he'd, you know, like, take some bits of skull and string them into a necklace and give it to Rusty as a souvenir. Like,
yeah. Action.
Yeah. Action!
Action, 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 action. God.
Even Ook knows how to pull his punches.
Oh, where was Ook? That was a favorite one of mine. I loved actually seeing the old intro. I thought that was really cool. Like, I think we've seen parts of it before, but we actually saw the whole thing this time.
I love the last bit where it's like, Rusty Venture, brought to you by smoking.
Yeah, not any cigarette brand specifically. Yeah. Just the idea of smoking.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, almost Family Guy-esque of, like, smoke.
Smoke.
But I also... Why was Hector so sad in the opening credits?
Well, he probably hasn't been home in a long time because he's basically been kidnapped.
I understand why Hector would be sad as a human being.
Oh, I see.
Why is he sad in the opening credits?
No idea.
Like, why would that be the show's, like, oh, fuck, this is the happiest he ever looks.
Yeah.
I guess probably. We have to use this shot. He's only kind of crying.
Pretty
so
much.
Strange.
Because the Ventures are the worst thing to ever happen to poor Hector.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Especially 25 years later.
Yeah. I've been here for 25 years? Oh, poor Hector.
Jonas? Poor. Dr. Venture is dead?
Make sure you leave those speed suits. Those are Venture property. Oh, God. Rusty, you're such a scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible person.
What else have we missed here?
I mean, there, we...
Mark Twain. Eugene Sandow.
Mark Twain. Fucking...
Aleister Crowley.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Oscar Alistair... Wilde.
See, I go for Nikola Tesla and his Avon ladies. Like, there's just so many, like, weird little, like, one-shot, one-line jokes in this thing that it's just, it's creepily dense.
It really is. Like, I think...
And it's, like, timeline accurate. Like, these are actual people that you're like, what if they all got together and created the guild?
Yeah. But not it's a possible. Guild of calamitous intent.
No.
No.
Oh, I love that line. That line just brings me joy.
It does.
So before we get too close to the end of this thing, I feel like we need to talk a little bit more about Brock. Because I feel like...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
As much as he is the B story to this episode, it kind of sneakily is the most important part of this episode. And it could be because we know, as fans of the show, that all this orb stuff... really isn't as important as this episode makes you believe it. I won't go too much farther than that in case for some reason you haven't seen where this goes, but maybe the orb isn't such a big deal. Maybe this whole quest isn't such a big deal. Maybe Sandow isn't that scary.
Same with Kato.
Yeah. But everything with Brock is important and is important to the next episode, two episodes, if you will.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that he is the A story, but he's definitely the key to us understanding the A story.
Yeah,
in this episode.
And it's that him kind of finding out what's going on as it's all happening is really kind of like it's our narrator in a way. Like it really just kind of gives us that through line. So he's listening to old like what are they called? The clay tubes that...
Yeah, play wax music. Cylinders. I forget what they're actually called. But yeah.
So he's listening to those, and we're getting the backstory while Rusty's going out and doing it himself. And I love the, here's this thing here. You need this. If I have this, what does Rusty have? I don't know. Roll of toilet paper? Which he absolutely did. Way to go, Kato.
Nailed it.
Well, he's known Rusty for a long time. He was actually closer to a father to Rusty than anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that.
But the major Brock thing with this one is he gets fired by the OSI.
Yeah.
Well, eliminated. Yes. Terminated. Whatever the phrase is.
Essentially fired. So he has to go see, is it Colonel Gathers? Is that his last name?
Yep.
I thought...
the stripper version of Colonel Gathers.
Oh, you're right. He does get fired and then goes to Hunter.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Who now, for some reason, is a female stripper.
Well, he's in hiding. He got he got his boobs put on. I think that's season one.
Yeah. And you don't want to know what he did for those 20s.
Hundreds. For those hundreds.
Oh, for those hundreds. That's right.
20s could be understandable. Hundreds.
What did you do? But this kind of, like, this leads into... I will boldly declare season 3 finale as the best season finale out there. And I know we said that might be for the Creek for season 2, but I might have just watched the season finale for the hell of it because I was already on a roll. And mother of God, like, this two-parter coming up is amazing. And we wouldn't be there without Orb. Like, if we just dove into that episode and you didn't see Orb, it wouldn't work.
Right. Well, it also, I mean, like, this whole episode, the last episode kind of sets up OSI. This kind of expands on how long both of these organizations have been around, you know?
Yeah.
But it also kind of sets up a lot of the OSI stuff as far as how we relate to OSI, especially, like you're saying, if Brock's kind of our stand-in, kind of our narrator, we have gotten fired as an audience from OSI. Like, OSI is not this kind of cute... sort of organization that Brock belongs to. It's now actively kind of working against the Ventures and Brock.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we see that they actually have power and are willing to kill. I mean, as we saw from the last episode with the Monarch.
Yeah.
And so now we're really like, oh, yeah, they're not all this kind of, like you said, cute or kind of just for the good guys or whatever. They're an equal to the Guild of Calamitous Intent. And when we're talking about the Guild, you're like, oh, so the Guild was kind of like the both of them together, if I'm saying that wrong. But then they became, then they kind of split over this idea. And so it's like, wow, this is kind of a natural progression, given over whatever, however long this would have been, 100 years or something like that, 75 years.
And this is this really hammers in the whole the good guy, bad guy thing. Oh, it is just bullshit. This is protagonist antagonist because they just fucking offed their guy because he asked for something and he had the wrong clearance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, these aren't good guys.
No.
They're just the protagonist.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Like, yeah.
For the greater good. I mean, the both of, you know, the GCI and OSI both have that same thing, just for the greater good. You know, whatever they can do with the least amount of, I guess, death or least amount of responsibility, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. Do you think... I think I know the answer to this question before I ask it, but I want to see your guys' opinion. Do you think Brock would have gone through with killing Rusty if he had to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or immobilizing him, at least.
I thought I silenced it this time.
Never.
I think he would. Like you said, I'm a little torn. Now that Graham said immobilized, I wouldn't be surprised if he reacted before Rusty did anything and was more proactive in that.
That's what that's where I'm at. I feel like if he had to kill him, he absolutely would do it. But I think he'd give him a shot. He'd give him just a half a beat of a shot because he might not care that much about Rusty. Like, they're friends, of course. But he loves the boys, and he's not going to take the boys' father away unless he absolutely has to.
I agree.
Do
you think, because we don't know the answer at all with this, though we can kind of say that this probably isn't the case, do you think Kato killed or would have killed Jonas Sr.?
No and no.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Brock is more of a company man than Kato ever was.
For sure.
I don't think Kato would have it in him to do it. And we don't really know Kato that well, even like all the way to season 7. Like, we don't really get to know Kato that well. Which is fine.
Yeah, he's really a mystery. Like, out of everybody, he's actually an international man of mystery.
Yeah, this is the most lines he has in the whole show in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the poor guy just wants to go sing karaoke.
He's a baker.
Talk about Top Chef.
Yeah, he's a baker. He wants to talk about Top Chef and go sing karaoke, poor guy. Is there anything else that we've missed? I feel like that's pretty much everything.
There's just so much world building and stuff and like future talk. It's tough. There is a ton of stuff that we could talk about.
Right.
But without ruining or talking for another 4 seasons.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough.
That's the struggle I'm having. Yeah.
I'm really trying to review this episode as if we've only seen this episode.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of it as.
Because this one really is, like, it really kicks a pebble down a hill that turns into just insanity throughout the rest of the series. And it's one of those, like, it's not like the pebble kick of, like, this is where it starts. This is like this has been going the whole time and we just haven't been telling you.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we just kind of, like, we just got it, like, we bumped up a level. Like, it's like, oh, the world just got a whole lot bigger. Whoa.
Yeah. This isn't just costumed villains going after each other. Like, oh, this is huge.
Yeah. I think, like I said earlier, this episode does it so well. When you're watching it, you're like, what am I seeing? This is fucking cool.
Yeah.
But I think we've hit pretty much everything before we start going into the, like, let's just talk season 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. Because we really could, and I don't want to go too far into that. So I feel like we should jump into our funniest moments just to save ourselves from another 2-hour conversation.
Yeah.
Yep.
I will say, for me reading my notes, my funniest moment of me taking my notes was about halfway through. I just wrote, "This episode is fan-fucking-tastic." But
I enjoyed that moment too.
My favorite moment that just makes me laugh hysterically, and it's just because I don't understand his reaction. I don't get it at all. At one point, Rusty to Billy says, "Ah, don't be such a dick." And Billy just replies, "Poop!" Why?
I have no answers.
How screaming poop back is a response to anything other than like, "Oh my god, what did you step in? Poop!" I don't get it. It's I rewound it and turned on the subtitles again, watched the subtitles, like, nope, that's what they say. I don't get it. But I love it.
Then that's why.
That's it.
Yep.
We just answered the question.
My favorite moment is basically anything with when the alchemist shows up.
Yeah.
Like when he talks about you TP'd his corporeal form. Or the get me a dictionary. And White's like, "Why? We have the internet. I don't want to play World of Warcraft. I want a dictionary."
I love anyone talking down to White. It's just fantastic.
It's the best.
And I love the alchemist. He's just great.
Solid. Solid all around. Nick, what about you?
So mine is, I'm always a sucker for what I consider like bad food. Like, for example, a cheddar cheesecake. Disgusting.
So, oh, where this is going.
Yeah, you do. So a red mocha cooler is Kahlua, Hershey's chocolate syrup, and a dash of red Kool-Aid, which then led me to go, I wonder what this is. Like, I wonder, because I feel like there's another cocktail that he mentions earlier, and I'm like, oh, right, it's like the sad bastard or whatever. And then I find out that there's a section on the Venture Brothers wiki called Doctails, and it's all these cocktails that Doc has created over the course of time. So that's we have amazing. The red mocha cooler, and every time one pops up, I'm going to bring it up.
So for the next episode, while we're recording it, I will have a red mocha cooler.
Gross.
That's so gross.
I will drink it live on recording.
Oh my god. Brian.
Good luck. You should have a tall glass of water next to that.
God. I will just drink the red mocha cooler at 10 in the morning.
Okay. I have to be a stickler here. I keep calling it mocha in my head, but it's moco, which makes less sense.
Okay, red mocha cooler. I will have one.
It's optional, served chilled, garnished with an orange slice and a cocktail umbrella.
I won't have the cocktail umbrella, and the orange slice is questionable.
Okay.
But the drink will be here.
I'm going to read the instructions on the wiki because I feel like they're worth reading because they're as disgusting as the concept of the red mocha cooler. Okay. Pour Hershey syrup into a glass of Kahlua until it's thick, almost undrinkable. Then sprinkle a dash of red Kool-Aid on the top. Don't stir it, so it just remains thick and undrinkable with the Kool-Aid as a little crispy skin at the top. Good luck tomorrow.
I am excited to drink it.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Yeah. Ooh.
You can add ice. I heard ice in that, so
it's gonna be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Ooh. Yeah. So you said you're done with being sick this week, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
He just wants to give the virus a fighting chance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We always kick viruses' ass, you know. Asses. Viruses as asses.
Yes. Right?
So I'm going to be on the virus side this time.
Yeah.
Great.
I feel like I'm choosing the wrong side, but whatever. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so quick round of plugs, and then we'll get out of this thing. Listen to After the Hype Thursdays 10 a.m. Read our articles Wednesdays and Fridays, athpod.com. Reach out to us at athpodcast@gmail.com. Just write Venture Brothers in the subject line. I will get us our own email address at some point, as long as I remember to do it. But at this point, there's really no need to. You can also find us on Facebook, where you can message us there. We love hearing from you, so please keep reaching out. Let us know what you thought of today's episode. Let us know if you're excited for the finale. All of that good stuff. Nick, Graham, anything to plug?
No.
Nope.
Cool. So with that, I will say goodbye and tune in next week for the end of season 3. I'm crying.
Yeah.
Bye.
He's crying. He's crying red Moco cooler.
Bye.
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 There it is.